streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob?
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Today on the College Football Daily, we are dropping our Clay Helton episode early for you tonight. It's currently Monday, September 13th, as I sit here and just wrapped recording with Greg Biggins. This is actually, though, the episode for Tuesday, September 14th. It's full of the Clay Helton firing reaction. Dante Williams will be the interim head coach. We've got quarterback updates at Boston College, at Texas A&M, and at Texas. And even stay tuned, after my conversation with Greg Biggins, we're going to jump over to a very short conversation with Brian Peroni of Gig'em 24/7 about how this Haynes King injury and Zach Calzada stepping up as, in the role of starting quarterback really hurts, or impacts at least, Texas A&M's chances against Alabama in a few weeks, and then the SEC West at large. But anyway, Clay Helton is gone. He's no longer going to be USC's head coach. Two touchdown losses to Stanford on Saturday ensured that. The writing was on the wall. Maybe it's been on the wall for a few years now. The Trojans pulled the plug on Monday night. Let's see what happens. Anyway, here's Greg Biggins. Okay, Greg Biggins joins us right now. Greg, appreciate you doing this with us in a pinch. So this news felt like a long time coming. I would just be curious to get your reaction as someone who's follows the program rather closely and seems to be the go-to guy for USC Trojans happenings. I think we all saw the Clay Helton stuff coming the last few days, and maybe even since 2018. Do you think that this was an overdue move considering the recruiting momentum and all that?
You know, that's always hard to say. I'm the guy who wants to feel like I'm, what's the term, like dancing on someone's grave. So I don't want to say it's long overdue and he should have been fired years ago. I'll just say this. There was always so much speculation. And one thing I've always said from, you know, someone taught me this when I first started in this business, that a rumored coaching change is always worse than the coaching change itself in terms of just recruiting and parents worrying about their kids. And there's been literally speculation and Clay's been on the hot seat for what, 3 years now, 4 years now, and it was never going to go away, right? Even if they win 10 games this year, the next year, if they lose one or two, it's going to be, okay, Clay, you got to get rid of Clay. Like, it was going to be so hard for him to ever kind of get off that proverbial hot seat. So it's, I'm not going to say it was long overdue, but I'll just say, I think a lot of people definitely wanted this to happen sooner than later. And timing wise, I think it probably does, you know, make some sense. If you feel he's not the guy moving forward, you know, don't allow him to bust out 8-9 wins in a row, which obviously USC has the talent to do. Now, all of a sudden, how do you fire a guy when they're 8-1, right? So if you know that he's not the guy, you know, make the move sooner than later. And I guess that's what they also felt.
I was going to say USC recruits itself, which I think is something that you're going to hear a lot this week, but they did go in the 2020 class, Greg, as you know, they had the number 64 recruiting class, only 12 commits, but it wasn't good. And you wrote that back then. When you look at the list of candidates, and I saw Dennis Dodd tweeted that the job is Luke Fickle's to turn down, but you've got Fickle, you've got James Franklin at Penn State, you've got Chris Peterson, maybe you take him out of retirement, he's doing television work. You know, the Urban Meyer jokes are too irresistible. Is there somebody who you think would just be a home run here? Maybe Dante Williams, you and I have talked about that as the interim coach, makes an impression, although that feels like it's impossible because they, you know, USC, Clay Helton was the interim coach. But is there someone who you think would be the top choice in your opinion?
I think Luke Fickle would be a home run. I think he's a great football coach. I think keeping Dante Williams on board in some capacity will be huge. Make him your, you know, recruiting coordinator, which he already is, and let him do his thing. Let him be the assistant head coach. Although, you know, a new head coach might come in and I don't want to say feel threatened, but, you know, a lot of players, again, this is, we're all speaking hypothetically, because what if, you know, what if USC goes on this run? I know Dante wants to be a head coach someday. I know that for a fact. We've had that conversation. So I know this is probably his dream job, but again, you're going to have boosters and alums say, hey, we can't go the route of hiring a guy who has zero head coach experience. So for me, who is a guy with head coaching experience who's just a great football coach? Recruiting will always take care of itself if you put the effort in. And that's what I think it means by USC recruits itself. You still have to put the effort in, but you start off in pole position for every SoCal kid. You start off in first place. And then if you don't recruit the kid, or if you're losing or not doing well, then maybe you slide to second, third, fourth. But for every top SoCal freshman, sophomore, you're in first place as of today. So that's what they mean by recruits itself. Urban Meyer, I've always been a fan. I don't see that happening. Chris Peterson, I think, is a great football coach. Is he a dynamic LA guy? Will he fit in? I don't know. You could probably find, you know, little things to, you know, to peck away at anyone. But again, if you're talking about just a really good football coach who knows what he's doing, man, it's tough to find someone with a better resume over the last few years than Fickell.
That's interesting that you point out they're always going to be in first place in pole position early on in that player's recruitment. I don't think Luke Fickell has any West Coast recruiting experience. So that's maybe the perfect marriage. You get a great football coach, which is clearly what they need. And you get somebody, he's going to put the effort in on recruiting. Cincinnati does a great job at that. You've been working the phones. I know you did a few stories on Damani Jackson, the five-star cornerback commit who's committed to USC. What do you think is going to happen with the players who currently make up USC's 2022 commitments class? Do you think they're all going to stay aboard and see what happens? And then what do you think the uncommitted kids who are interested in USC do as well?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't matter if it's USC or if it's Elbow State A&M. You always get the same reaction from every kid. It's, yes, I'm still committed. I want to see who the new head coach is going to be. Still open to other schools. That's always the hard, fast, quick reaction. Damani Jackson, talked to him for a little bit. A funny thing, I was trying to talk to him yesterday from his Michigan visit, but his phone died as he was getting on the phone. And so today was kind of a kill two birds. And he said exactly that. Still 100% committed to USC. Love Dante. Not sure he'll be the guy. But he said, whoever they bring in, he knows, this is him quoting, I know it's going to be a big time hire. They're not going to go hire someone who's not going to be good. It's they're going to bring in a big name guy who's going to be a great head coach. So I still feel really good about USC. Moving forward, he still likes Michigan. He had a great visit, and he's going to visit Alabama in November. So, you know, those are his three schools. He said his phone's blowing up, but he's going to focus on just those three schools. And, you know, if he likes the hire, which, you know, I think a lot of people assume, you know, they will make a good hire, then I think Damani still looks like he's pretty solid. If he doesn't like the hire, then I think Michigan, Alabama have a chance. I think that goes for a lot of the players. Maybe some of the guys in the South, obviously USC was hitting Georgia extremely hard. And those guys, even though they have, you know, some guys committed, I think it was always going to be hard end of the day to keep those guys committed or interested. Not interested, they'll keep them interested. But, you know, once it kind of gets down to that 12th hour and all of a sudden, here comes Georgia, here comes Bama, here comes LSU, Clemson, and those guys start going full court press. It's hard to keep those Southern kids home, keep them away from home, I should say. So I think those guys, but the local kids, I think will still be very receptive to USC. Again, they committed to USC for more than just Clay. And that's not a shot at Clay. It's just they committed to USC because it was USC and they liked the assistant coaches. And so, you know, let's just for the fun of it, say it is a Chris Peterson, a Luke Fickell, a whoever, right? Trey Scott. I think the key is not, you mentioned, you know, these guys may not have West Coast ties. And that's why I think the staff he puts together is going to be big. How many guys does he hold over? How many, you know, recruiting staff people does he keep? I mean, USC has really built up, you know, the recruiting staff just over the last year and a half. Marshall Sherrington, Mondo Hawkins, Michael Hutchins. And these are guys they've hired in the last couple of years who have done a phenomenal job doing a lot of the legwork. And so, you know, if you can keep those guys, maybe you keep a couple staff holdovers. I think Dante Williams would be huge. You know, Vic Soto, the D-line coach, has been really, really good. Vianney Talamaivao, he's an offensive assistant. He might be a guy you look at as an offensive line coach moving forward. Extremely tight with the Polynesian community and extremely tight West Coast-wise, regardless if you're Polynesian or not, Big V. So there's a lot of guys on staff that I think you might look at keeping, and even guys on that support staff that I think have done a great job. So I'm fascinated not so much, not just by the head coaching hire, but moving forward, what assistants does he keep and what support staff does he keep?
Good point. I forgot to mention Mario Cristobal as a candidate, although I don't think he would actually do that. I think, you know, Super Mario is just going to get a well-deserved raise out of this from Oregon. But my last question does pertain to Oregon and the Pac-12 in general. Greg, given what you know about the USC roster and, you know, Jackson Dart's probably going to be the guy once Keaton Slovis moves on. And I'd like to see a little bit of Dart this fall anyway. They're a natural transfer portal destination because of the NIL and just the glamour of SC. How close is this roster? If you put in a good new coach, how far away are they from winning the Pac-12 and finally making a playoff push?
USC, how close is this roster once it gets poached by the portal? Or how close? I mean, you said that, not me. I mean, that always does happen, right? Again, they could bring in the best head coach, but you're always going to have a few guys who, you know, just want a fresh start. Now, I have no idea who those guys are. And one thing, it pains me to say it. I've said it every time we've talked and anytime I've done any interviews, and I even kind of like, you know, scoffed at Urban Meyer saying, you know, a year ago when, oh, you can win a national title at USC by not leaving 10 miles of your school. The difference in linemen in Southern California and at USC currently versus what you see at Alabama, at Clemson, Notre Dame, Ohio State, all those schools in the SEC that are powers, it is striking. And Oregon Cristobal has done a phenomenal job going outside the region and recruiting linemen. So for me, if we want to see USC back to, you know, a top four playoff team, they're always going to have a quarterback. They're always going to get the receivers. They're always going to have really good skill guys. But if you want to see USC really back to those Pete Carroll days, they got to somehow find a way to recruit along the defensive line, especially D tackle, and then offensive line. They got to do a much better job bringing in just elite strength and toughness. And that's just right now, that's the biggest thing that I see. You know, Stanford, you know, I didn't see all of the game. I was watching a little Joe Rogan concert out at the Great Western Forum, Trey. But, you know, just driving home and getting reaction, they said Stanford was kind of the more tougher physical team up front. And you know, if you're USC, if you want to be dominant in a playoff team, you got to address that. And you got to be able to recruit nationally, which they can. So right now, how the team is presently constructed, I don't think they're ready to compete against the Bamas of the world because of up front. But once they, you know, kind of get that situated, O-line, D-line, D-tackle depth, you know, recruit some big, fast linebackers like they used to in the, you know, the Ray Malaugu, Brian Cushing days, Clay Matthews days, then I think we're ready to go.
Yeah, no, just to be clear, I don't think they're going to get rated. I think they could do the rating just based on who they are. And also to your point, Greg, I've last few preseasons, I've fallen into that trap of, hey, they got a quarterback, they got some receivers, I'll pick them to win the Pac-12. And it just does not usually work like that. Greg Biggins, we appreciate you joining us. We'll let you go and hit the phones.
Awesome, Trey. Always good talking to you, man.
Appreciate Greg joining me. He's going to be a busy man for the next few days, tracking down those USC commits and USC targets. Anyway, Texas A&M, SEC West hopes might be swirling the drain with Haynes King injury. Let's hear from Brian Peroni.
Okay, Brian Peroni, as promised, Brian, I just wanted to get you on real fast to talk about Zach Calzada and what you think he can build on after what I would deem a rough showing against Colorado, but he redeemed himself with a nice touchdown pass to win the game.
I think it really depends on which Calzada. You see, the one from the first three quarters was nervous, overthrew a bunch of guys, just rifled the ball. In the fourth quarter, he actually had two scoring drives. One, he dove in and fumbled right before the goal line, and the other, he threw a touchdown pass. So if they're able to get that Zach Calzada, then A&M, you know, still has a chance in all these games down the road.
Yeah, so the mid-October timeline that Jimbo gave for Haynes King, let's just go down the list. We've got we've got New Mexico. That's a win. And then Arkansas at Jerry World, Mississippi State, Alabama on October 19th or on October 9th, and then Missouri on October 16th. Maybe Haynes King comes back for that. I think that the headliner though, Brian, is like I'm a little bit deflated right now about the Alabama Texas A&M game that I thought was legitimately going to be nearly 50-50 because it's in College Station.
I know for sure. I mean, A&M was always going to have an unproven quarterback, but Haynes King has shown a little more than Calzada to this point. Although King did have three interceptions the first week, so you know, you never really knew what he was bringing to the table. I'm curious what Calzada does this week against New Mexico. Should be a relatively easy win, so you know, maybe it does something for his confidence, but that and the Arkansas game will be telling. But yeah, right now the prospects against Alabama are definitely tough.
Appreciate Brian Peroni jumping on real quick, talking to me about Haynes King and Zach Calzada. Also appreciate Greg Biggins doing this in a pinch, and our producer Lance Glenn, who probably worked late Monday night putting this episode together. Have a great day. We'll talk to you on Wednesday for the next edition of the College Football Daily.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does, 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.